Hi, this is David Wilk for Writer's Cast, a podcast about books and authors. I'm here today with Alice Eve Cohn, the author of What I Thought I Knew, a memoir. How are you?
I'm very well, and I'm delighted to be here.
Well, I'm really glad to have you here. We happen to be in New York City, which is where you live.
Yes.
It's a beautiful day, and a good day to talk, I think. I read this book. I think I picked this, you know, as I've sort of learned, I have to pick books fairly carefully that I'm interested in. I picked this book because as a daughter of a mother who took DES, which was a fertility drug prescribed in the 40s and 50s, I think, and which had some ill effects for the daughters of the mothers.
Exactly.
But that was sort of the why, you know, and kind of what struck me about your story. But really, once I started reading it, I found it was, you know, pretty gripping. I like your writing style, which was very evocative and impressionistic.
Thank you.
But maybe you could talk a little bit about what happened to you and how you came to then write the story, because there was a gap between what happened and then the telling of the story.
Absolutely. Well, you mentioned the DES, and in my case, the effect of the DES was that I had a deformed uterus. I was told at the age of 30 that I was infertile, in fact, told with such an absolute declaration by the doctor that I would never, ever become pregnant naturally, that he could make me pregnant with fertility drugs, but he cautioned strongly against that because I had this small deformed uterus. He told me that it would be impossible for me ever to carry a baby past 6 months, and of course that's a very dangerous proposition for a developing baby. So at the age of 30, and henceforth, I assumed that I was infertile and adopted a baby, raised my daughter Julia. And then at age 44, 14 years after being told that I was infertile, I started to experience mysterious symptoms. I thought I was sick. I went from doctor to doctor, various specialists to find out what was wrong. My gynecologist told me I was in menopause. She sent me to a gastroenterologist who told me I had this illness and that illness. Another doctor sent me for CAT scans and x-rays and all sorts of medical procedures, prescription drugs. 6 months later, I noticed a swelling in my abdomen, and I went back to one of my doctors who raced me to the hospital for an emergency CAT scan for what she told me was a large uterine tumor. And I found out in this emergency CAT scan that I did not, in fact, have a tumor. I was 6 months pregnant.
Which is a completely flummoxing idea for almost anybody who tries to imagine that. I think most women just can't comprehend that idea. You know, how could you not? I mean, because it's not like you were a teenager, you know.
Well, frankly, I couldn't comprehend it. I literally couldn't comprehend it. I was talking to the radiologist who's trying to tell me that they found this baby in me, and I literally thought that I was asleep. I'd fallen asleep in the waiting room waiting for him to tell me what they found. I thought I was dreaming, and he could not persuade me otherwise. So he took me into the sonogram room. He said, I know you don't believe me, and really we're very surprised too because your records say you're in menopause. And they did the sonogram, and lo and behold, there's a baby on the screen. And not just a little slip of a thing, a 6 month, quite developed baby, and it was such a shock. And I not only hadn't expected it, but really it wasn't a time in my life when I wanted to have a baby.
Right, you already had. Now, by that time, your older daughter was already how old?
She was 9 years old.
And then you were in a relationship with a guy.
I'd just gotten engaged.
And you had neither of you imagined another child entering the scene at that point.
Right. It wasn't what we were thinking at the time.
Right. So you had this huge disruption of your life. By then you were a playwright and a writer.
Yeah.
You were doing all this work, and so all of a sudden this thing happens. And of course then you also are faced with the fact that through the first 6 months of pregnancy, your fetus had been exposed to things that a fetus isn't supposed to not be exposed to.
Yes, it was quite a terrifying period of time for me. As you say, the fetus had been exposed to X-rays, and I had taken synthetic hormones for 14 years because of what my doctor had presumed to be a very low estrogen level. And these were drugs that should not be, that a fetus should not be exposed to. I had a variety of tests that were also contraindicated for pregnancy. And in addition, I had this this belief that was instilled in me from the age of 30 that I would never be able to carry a baby past 6 months. And here I was 6 months pregnant. So I felt like I was on the precipice of just a disaster. I was afraid that the baby would be born any day and suffer the consequences of prematurity, in addition to the injuries I was certain I'd already inflicted on this developing fetus because of the complete lack of prenatal care, as well as all of the dangerous medical interventions for other misdiagnosed problems that didn't exist. I initially asked if I could have an abortion, and was told it was too late. So there was a dark time where I just felt absolutely trapped, that this thing had happened, that there would be very sad consequences, and that I had inadvertently done these terrible things to this developing baby, and that somehow everything that could have gone wrong had gone wrong, and here I was not knowing what would happen next.
Right, and you go through, I mean, I think this period is very complicated for you. You know, you have also you talked about feeling suicidal, and, you know, then you do eventually decide, and it all feels at that point in the story, I think the feeling for the reader is, of kind of a craziness, like you're in that state of not really being able to make decisions clearly because there's so many things going on. And I felt that. And then, I felt this, that terrible dilemma that you had of trying to decide whether to have the baby or go to Kansas.
Yes.
To have the abortion.
As you mentioned, I got so terribly distraught that a close friend helped me out and arranged for me to meet for a consultation with an abortion specialist at New York Hospital, who interviewed me. I really didn't know what he could possibly do for me because I knew that it was, too late for a legal abortion. I'd been told that already. And he said, okay, I'm hearing that the mother's life is at risk. You're having suicidal thoughts. Therefore, it is possible for you to have a late-term abortion, but not in New York State, in Wichita, Kansas. Now, we know, certainly didn't make a mental note at the time of the doctor's name, but I know now that it was Dr. Tiller.
Who was murdered.
The murdered, yeah. Recently murdered abortion doctor whose clinic in Wichita I was then referred to. And in my desperate state at the time, the abortion specialist in New York Hospital asked if I wanted to have him make an appointment for me there that I would then have a few days to think about. I had literally 7 days before it would then be past the legal limit anywhere in the country. I asked him to make the appointment, and I had a very complicated, difficult week of just pondering what to do. And I think for any woman, this would be the most difficult decision to ever have to make. And I think I was profoundly grateful to discover that I actually had an option. I am passionately pro-choice, and in reflection now, I don't think I was reflective at the time, I was just in a period of desperation. In reflection now, I actually think that having a choice at that time saved my life and saved the baby's life. But I gave it a week of serious contemplation and ultimately decided that I did want to have the baby.
And this, I guess, this was also, you had been given all sorts of horror story potential, you know, kind of potential outcomes for, by that time.
Yes, I had, they'd done genetic testing. They said, well, we don't have any idea why, but it looks like the baby is genetically female, but she has a penis. This could mean that she has a fatal salt wasting disorder, which can be treated with daily medication. So, and you would, of course, have to consider surgery for her. And so suddenly, my fiancé and I, who a week before thought we were going to get married and continue to raise my older daughter, Julia, and not have any more children, we were all of a sudden about to be new parents, and new parents of a child with potentially very serious health considerations. And then there were ethical considerations that we had to ponder. It was so complicated.
all out of the blue. And
it was completely all out of the blue, and it was happening so fast. And then the day after I decided, yes, I'm going to have this baby, I called the very nice receptionist at the Wichita Women's Clinic and said, please cancel my appointment for tomorrow. I had made a reservation for a flight to Wichita, canceled that, took a deep breath, thought, okay, I don't know what's going to happen. I'm scared, I'm uncertain, but I'm going through with this. This is it. And I, the next morning, I walked my daughter, started walking her to school, got halfway across the street, got to the median on Broadway, and suddenly had a labor pain, had a contraction, a uterine contraction. I was doubled over in pain, couldn't walk any further. My daughter had never crossed the street by herself, but I said, I'll watch you, you know, cross the street. The crossing guard will help you on the next block. I stood there in the middle of the street, doubled over in pain, watched her get to school, went back, and that from that day onward, I was on bed rest.
Right.
So it all happened so quickly and was so outside of my experience. And I was still trying to wrap my head around all of these unexpected changes in my identity. Here I, you know, at 30, I made peace with the fact that I was infertile. At 44, I was having to make peace with the fact that I was going to have a baby any millisecond. certainly within the next 3 months, if I were lucky and could hold the baby that long.
And then, well, yeah, not only, and then it's kind of, this is the change, not only the change in perspective, but you also have the physical changes of being pregnant, which introduces a whole other set of issues. You know, you have hormonal, and, you know, it just changes everything. And then, of course, your fiancé and you had a disagreement about, I mean, about, because you were thinking about an abortion, he didn't want to do that. Once he decided, you know, once he found out you were pregnant, he was ready to go ahead.
Yeah.
So you also had that conflict to deal with. So, you know, it was a...
Which was quite an intense conflict. He is now, and he was at the time, politically pro-choice, absolutely in favor of a woman's right to have an abortion, but on a personal level, it was a very different thing. And this was his baby, and it was a very difficult kind of turning point moment for us, where he told me that he would endorse whatever decision I wanted to make, and if I needed to go to Wichita, I should do that. But he wouldn't go with me, and he might not be there when I got back. So these were, you know, kind of, in my personal life, these were enormous painful decisions to have to make. And some of it wasn't decisions, some of it was out of my control. It was just a lot was changing, transforming in my life that I'd never expected, and I was having trouble keeping up with these new realities.
Right, and then, of course, you know, we're jumping ahead a little bit,
yeah.
But you do go ahead, you do have the baby, and you find out that she does not have genital deformation, but there are other issues that you then have to deal with. And so, you know, I know the book, you know, I don't want to kind of short-circuit the book for anyone who might not have read it. I think there's the crux may be this decision point of, you know, this sort of what happened to you.
Yeah.
But then there's more to the story. There's what happens after she's born, and you have to deal with what, you know, with her condition.
Right.
Now, I wanted to ask this, the Russell Silver syndrome mm-hmm. that she has, is that fairly unusual? It's fairly rare?
Yes, she has a rare growth disorder called Russell Silver syndrome that luckily was diagnosed very early because her endocrinologist was able to treat her with medications that helped circumvent some of the worst problems that a child with Russell Silver might encounter. But for my daughter, the most obvious manifestation of this is the asymmetry that's a universal facet of Russell Silver syndrome. The right side of her body is smaller than the left side. Her right leg is shorter than her left.
Right.
So that has been, it's required a lot of intervention. She's had lots and lots of physical therapy.
Has she had the surgery on her leg to lengthen
it? This past year, she had the first of two surgeries that she'll need to lengthen her leg. So the maximum that a leg can be lengthened in a leg lengthening surgery in one procedure, which the whole procedure takes 8 months, is 5 centimeters. So her femur, the upper part of her leg, is now 5 centimeters longer. She's wearing just a small shoe lift. She'd been wearing a larger one before. And then in a few years, when she's closer to her adult height, she'll have a second surgery that will equalize her legs, which is kind of,
right.
It's fantastic, but I would have to say her fourth grade year was the year from hell. It was really painful and tedious, arduous.
Really hard on the kids and hard on the parent too. But I think in a lot of ways, I realize you're very lucky to have lived in New York with all this, because, you know, when you recognize the doctor who recognizes the Russell Silver syndrome is maybe one of the only doctors in America who would have known, right? I mean, these are sort of, think about what it's like in places without the medical care and experience that you have in New York or Boston, maybe Chicago, you know, the big cities. You know, you have a lot of kind of lucky miracles that enable you to go forward.
No, the doctor who was monitoring the pregnancy and came to the to look at Eliana on the day that she was born, who was trying to see if she had the salt wasting syndrome, which might have accounted for the genital anomalies. She said very happily, "Her genitals are perfect." and then she enigmatically said, "I will be calling you." And I thought, I wonder why. And it's because her colleague, coincidentally, is the number one Russell Silver syndrome specialist in the country. So she had an inkling. As you say, there were a series of kind of wonderfully lucky coincidences, also wonderful, terribly, horribly unlucky coincidences before the fact. But there were some very lucky things that happened, and she really headed us in the right direction so that Eliana was able to get what she needed.
Yeah, no, I think it's right. I'm really fascinated. I mean, I think the story is really great.
Thank you.
You know, there's and I was interested in the fact that you waited to write this. You know, that's part of the book. You talk about suddenly in 2006, 7 years after it happened, feeling the urge, the need to write it all down.
Yeah.
So what do you think that, you know, what was the reason for that? I mean, it was it that you just needed emotional closure? You needed to get to a place where it was an experience rather than part of your daily life?
Mm. Well, I'm a writer, and early on, even when I was pregnant, I thought I need to tell the story. I need to write this story, and it actually was very distressing to me that I was unable to. You know, a year after the birth, 2 years after, 3 years after, I wanted so much to write about it, and I felt like it actually was very difficult to talk about. Here, my daughter was in preschool, and the other parents were talking about their, you know, how fun their prenatal birthing classes were, and I didn't think that my story would quite fit in in that social milieu. And I, but I really wanted to write about it because that's what I do, and I just couldn't. I thought I would make a solo theater piece out of it because that's what I do, and I have often in the past taken big life events and turned them into often comic or partially comical performances, but this story was so confusing to me. Even years after, I had such conflicted feelings about what had happened. I felt very inhibited talking to anybody but a few close friends, and I simply couldn't put the words on the page or contemplate performing it for an audience. It was a terrifying thought. And it was a modified writer's block. I was writing work for jobs, but I felt like I was kind of creatively cut off from what I really wanted to write about. And this was one in the category of, I don't even know if it was a decision or just sort of happened when I, exactly 7 years after I found out that I was pregnant, I found out on Erev Rosh Hashanah 1999, on the eve of the Jewish New Year, a beautiful sunny Friday, when I was rushed for this emergency CAT scan, and I found out that I was pregnant, and that kind of launched this whole adventure. And 7 years later, coincidentally, Erev Rosh Hashanah, the eve of the Jewish New Year, fell on a Friday. It was a beautiful, sunny Friday. I took a walk in the same part of Central Park I had 7 years earlier, and I guess it kind of triggered a rush of memories. And I walked back to my apartment and sat down, and whereas for 7 years before I just stared at the screen and not been able to write, I started to write. And I had this realization that it was happening now, and I had to just write until I was finished. And I couldn't slow down, and I couldn't tell anybody.
How long did it take you to write?
It took a year. And it was a self-imposed deadline. I wanted to finish it, and I didn't want to outgrow the story. I wanted to write it in the moment. I was in a driven state, you know, after this long period of not being able to write. And so I wrote as many hours a day as I could. For half a year, just kind of getting it all out in a big,
right,
unstructured,
right,
so mush.
Just write it all down, get it out.
I just got it out.
And then you can go back and structure it and meld it and make it.
Exactly.
Into,
I took a month or two off, you know, kind of put it aside, came back and read it and thought, whoa, that's a lot of material. Where's the story? What is right. Where does it begin? Where does it end? It's all out of sequence. Right. I don't know what it is.
Now, was the list making that you do, was that part of that then, or did you do that later?
The list making came really early, and it wasn't planned.
List making is not a thing that you do every day in your... I mean, in other words, that's not a feature of your daily life. It was part of the story.
It was part of the story, and it was, as I was trying to remember in as much detail as I could, what I was going through as it was unfolding, I remembered that I tried to take stock at various times and think, okay, I'm really confused. I don't know what's going on. I don't know what's coming next. What do I know? What can I take for granted? All right, I know I'm infertile. I've known that for 15 years. I know that I'm in menopause because three doctors have told me so. I know that I can't possibly be pregnant. I know I have a huge... swelling. I have a history of cancer in my family. I'm sure this is cancer. So that's what I knew. That's what I thought right. I could take for granted. Right. Then later, it was completely different.
Right, but throughout the book, throughout you go through, book. You make those, and that kind of creates a structure, I think, for what I know.
Yeah.
And then that's an organizing tool to kind of understand where you are. And, of course, the name of the book is what I thought I knew,
yeah.
because what you can talk about then, or the nature of the book, is so much of what we take for granted, what we think we know, no matter how well we organize ourselves,
right.
life is random, and it's really surprising. And you know, you talk about that, and I think this is a Jewish thing, but it struck me very hard, or maybe you know, it resonated for me. This idea that the minute you say I'm good, you're screwed. You know, you've just opened the door for retribution because. You're not allowed to be that happy. You're not allowed to be self-satisfied. I think that's really where it comes to, is yeah. this sense of self-reflection. I'm good. Things are great. I couldn't be happier. The minute you say that, you're in for trouble.
Right.
You just sort of know that. I take it for granted. The minute I say that, ever, I think, oh, my God, what have I done?
Right. And, it, you know, the name that I did think at first it was exclusively a Jewish thing, that the evil eye, but since I've mentioned this, I've had Italian friends and Greek right. friends, people say, excuse me, we have the right. evil eye also, and it's the same thing. As you say, you declare, wow, I'm happy, life is good, dum-da-dum-dum,
right.
and the next thing you know.
right, and I think that's just a natural human
yeah.
state. That if we ever feel, because we know things don't stay good. It's
right.
we live in a state of entropy. You know, things, anytime they're good, they're going to get bad again. So
it is, that it's life. It is just so lifelike for things to just alternate from moment to moment and minute to minute and day to day between the, you know, the joyous and the right. terrifying.
And we don't know where we are in the story. And I think, you know, when yeah. you write a book, and this is, you know, I think memoir is very complicated because it's not just your life and your story, it's all the people that you're connected to. So you're telling your story in relation to all of these other people, your two daughters, your husband. I think it's important to tell the story and place yourself someplace in that arc of what, you know, whatever our lives end up being. I really, you know, I love this book, so I really appreciate your talking to me about it. Alice Eve Cohn, What I Thought I Knew, a memoir, which was published by Viking about a month ago, I think.
Just a week ago.
A week ago, mm-hmm. I'm sorry. I read it, I guess I got it a little bit early, so I read it sooner. So it just came out in July.
Exactly,
it's a brand
one
new
week
book.
Ago, yeah.
Congratulations.
Thank you so much.
And thank you for talking to
a
me.
Pleasure
this is
to
David
talk
Wilk
to you.
For Writer's Cast with Alice Eve Cohn.